Today is Wednesday, September 2nd, and this is the World Socialist website. Articles have been read by an automated narration. Bond yields surge as governments borrow for war and rearmament. The yields on government bonds have reached their highest levels since before the financial crisis of 2008, as the financial markets deliver a directive to governments around the world that they must slash spending on all social services and deepen their attacks on the working class in order to pay for war and rearmament. Yesterday, global bond markets were hit by a sell-off. Yields in the UK, Germany, France, and Australia rose to levels not seen since the 1990s. UK borrowing costs rose to their highest levels since 2008. The yield on the Japanese 10-year bond, which had been at ultra-low levels until recently, spiked to 3%, its highest level since 1996. In the UK, the yield on the 10-year bond jumped by as much as 0.11 percentage points, a significant movement where normal movements are only a tiny fraction of a percentage point, reaching as high as 5.26%. The yields on the 30-year bond jumped by as much as 0.12 percentage points to reach 5.9%, the highest level since the late 1990s. The rise in U.S. bond yields was particularly significant because it came in the face of attempts by Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent to suppress them at the longer end of the market. Last month, he said that Treasury buybacks would rise from $2 billion to $4 billion, and possibly more, in each operation to try and quell the rise. This measure failed even before it had started. The yield on the 10-year Treasury bond rose to 4.8%, its highest level since Trump came to office in 2025, amid fears it is heading even higher. The yield on the 30-year bond rose to 5.27%, back to the level it was before Bessent made his announcement. As Bloomberg noted, the signal was a clear message from the world's biggest bond market. It'll take more than an out-of-schedule tweak to the Treasury's buyback to soothe investors worried about the surging national debt and persistently elevated inflation. This failure is symptomatic not just of the immediate situation, but of a deeper historic process. The disintegration of all the methods used by the U.S. and other governments to stave off the deepening crisis of the global capitalist economy and its financial system, which has erupted with increasing ferocity over the past three decades. Following the collapse of Lehman Brothers in 2008, setting off the deepest financial crisis since the 1930s, the U.S. government organized billions of dollars in bailouts for corporations as the U.S. Federal Reserve cut interest rates to zero while pumping trillions of dollars into the financial system via quantitative easing through the purchase of treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities. But the crisis was never overcome. It erupted in a new form in March 2020, at the start of the pandemic, when fears of its economic and financial consequences led to a freeze in the U.S. Treasury market. For days, no buyer could be found for U.S. government debt, supposedly the safest financial asset in the world. The Fed intervened to the tune of $4 trillion, at one point outlaying hundreds of millions of dollars a day. In 2008, U.S. federal debt was $10 trillion. Last month, it passed $40 trillion with the interest bill running at $1 trillion a year, fast becoming the largest item in the U.S. government budget. A doom loop is rapidly developing in which the government must borrow money just to pay the interest costs on its past debt. This is symptomatic of a state sliding into bankruptcy and decay. This means the methods used in the past to rescue the financial system are collapsing. The U.S. was able to bail itself out because of the role of the dollar as the global currency and confidence in the strength of the American financial system, which meant it could draw on financial resources from the rest of the world. That confidence is now disintegrating. The disintegration is being reflected not least in a massive decline in the value of the dollar as expressed in gold, the ultimate store of real value, as opposed to the mountain of fictitious capital as seen in the growth of corporate and government debt and the escalation of the stock market. In March 2020, the gold price was around $1,500 per ounce. Today, it is $4,500. In other words, in the space of just 6 years, the value of the dollar against gold, the incarnation of real value, is one-third of what it was. Measured against the level of 1971 when gold was $35 per ounce, before U.S. President Nixon removed its gold backing, the decline is even starker. At that time, a dollar was worth 1/35 of an ounce of gold. Today, it is worth 1/4500 of an ounce. The world capitalist system has entered a historic breakdown, the cause of which is the entry into a third world war, in which the ruling classes, with the U.S. in the lead, seek to solve the irresolvable contradictions of the system over which they preside by military means. The Ninth Congress of the Socialist Equality Party, U.S., held last month clearly identified this process. In his opening report, SEP National Chairman David Norris stated that it is no longer a question of whether such a war will erupt. It had already begun. The world war is underway, developing in the manner of a metastatic process. It is spreading globally as a chronic and expanding condition, colonizing new regions, fusing previously separate conflicts, and progressively transforming the world economy and every national state in preparation for the general conflagration toward which it tends. A central component of this transformation is the demand, now being transmitted to every government via the bond markets, that they must step up their onslaught against the working class to unprecedented levels to finance war and military spending. Not putting the figures expressed in the financial markets into words, the Financial Times declared in an editorial that governments could not ignore the signals coming from the bond markets, nor try to suppress them. That means tackling rising welfare and pension costs head on and resisting giveaways or tax cuts without credible funding plans. Avoiding pain today would only bring greater pain tomorrow. In the U.S., the Washington Post, speaking for the financial oligarchy, has been waging a campaign demanding that the debt crisis be imposed on the working class. On August 10th, in an editorial under the headline, "When America's Budget Will Break Disastrously," it warned that if the U.S. needs to boost defense spending for a protracted war, it doesn't have much room to grow. On August 24th, under the headline, "To Get the National Debt Under Control, Start with the Retirement State," it was more specific, stating that there was no realistic path to solvency for the U.S. government without changes to the retirement state. The bond sell-off is an expression of the historic crisis of the capitalist system, of which war, the debt crisis, and the deepening assault on the working class are interconnected parts. The run-up of the debt has been incurred to prop up the financial system and enrich the oligarchs that dominate it. Now they are demanding that the working class pay for the crisis they, in the institutions of the capitalist state, have created. Workers did not create the debt. They must refuse to pay for it. That refusal must be concretized through the political fight for an internationalist socialist program, the conquest of political power by the working class, the expropriation of the financial oligarchy, and the transfer of the banks and major corporations into public ownership under democratic control. Whistleblower warns Postal Service will deny mail ballots to millions under Trump scheme. A whistleblower report by an anonymous United States Postal Service official made public on Tuesday warns that under an executive order issued by President Donald Trump, USPS will withhold mail ballots from millions of voters. The report, together with a letter to Postmaster General David Steiner, was published Tuesday by Senator Richard Blumenthal, D. Connecticut, the top Democrat on the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. Blumenthal received the report Monday through Whistleblower Aid, a nonprofit legal group. The whistleblower wrote to Blumenthal, "Potentially millions of American voters may not receive their mail-in ballot this election cycle in a timely manner, or at all." Trump has stacked the USPS Board of Governors with Republicans who parrot the lie that Biden's 2020 election victory was the result of fraud. The whistleblower's report asserts that USPS has rushed to set up a portal for vetting mail ballots in defiance of court orders blocking implementation of Trump's March 31st executive order curtailing mail-in voting. The executive order is based on the pretext that mail-in voting has allowed hundreds of thousands of non-citizens to vote. a total fabrication. In 2024, 47 million Americans, or 30% of the electorate, voted by mail. Of these, the Brookings Institution found 4 documented cases of fraud out of 10 million ballots. The attack on mail-in voting is part of a broader effort to disenfranchise working class and poor voters. The authoritarian drive includes the Save America Act, which would require proof of citizenship to register to vote and a photo ID to cast a ballot. Trump is also threatening to deploy federal troops and/or Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE officers at polling stations, seize voting machines, and otherwise manipulate, overturn, or suspend the November 3rd midterm elections, which the Republicans are expected to lose. The executive order directs the Secretary of Homeland Security to compile lists in each state of U.S. citizens 18 and older and eligible to vote, and to send the list to the states prior to any federal election. The states are then required to send lists of all registered voters to whom they are sending mail-in and absentee ballots to the federal government and USPS. The Postal Service is tasked with verifying these lists and withholding mail ballots from voters not on the lists of citizens compiled by federal agencies. Finally, the Department of Justice is directed to investigate and prosecute state and local election officials who issue ballots to individuals deemed by the federal government to be ineligible to vote in federal elections. The order also directs the Postal Service to refuse to deliver mail ballots in states that do not comply with the new rules. The very attempt of the Trump administration to overhaul the election system is unconstitutional. Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution explicitly delegates the manner of holding federal elections to the states while giving Congress the power to make or alter regulations concerning federal elections. The Constitution grants the executive branch no power to administer or regulate federal elections. Lower courts, including the Court of Appeals for the First Circuit, blocked implementation of the executive order on these constitutional grounds. On August 24th, the right-wing majority on the Supreme Court reversed one of the 2 lower court injunctions on technical grounds without ruling on the legality of the executive order. Writing in dissent, liberal justice Ketanji Brown Jackson accused the Trump administration of seeking to undermine the midterm elections, stating, "The government's actual objective, to secure our imprimatur for its effort to foment chaos ahead of the November elections." At present, a temporary restraining order is in place blocking the order for 14 days, with the expectation that the Supreme Court will rule shortly on its legality. USPS is no longer merely a carrier of ballots. It is instead transformed into the gatekeeper of voter eligibility, lawyers challenging Trump's executive order wrote in one case. Speaking of the whistleblower report, Blumenthal told reporters on Monday that the main takeaway for me is that the Postal Service has designed a system to disenfranchise millions of Americans. 1/3 of all Americans cast their ballots by mail, and the USPS puts all of their votes at risk. The whistleblower report describes a chaotic and largely untested drive by USPS to put in place a portal for receiving mail voter lists from the states in time to be used in the midterm elections. The report cites, in the run-up to the planned September 1st launch date, multiple USPS officials describing the election ballot mail IT system development process as a shit show. It adds that a number of workers familiar with the IT process believe that the entire process seemed to be a mess. The whistleblower focuses on the adoption by USPS of a 0% failure rule in verifying lists of voters sent by the states to receive mail ballots. He reports, "Given states often deliver ballots to the USPS in large ballot batches, a 0% failure rate during verification can derail vast numbers of ballots. The new scanning verification process is designed so that after a single failed barcode verification, USPS will stop the sample scanning and refuse to accept the entire batch of ballots." He adds, "It could delay ballots by the thousands in repeated verification cycles and thus prevent states from mailing enormous numbers of ballots. States constantly update their voter rolls, and the lists they send to the Postal Service could be out of date within minutes as new voters register and existing ones update their registrations because they've moved." Under these conditions, the whistleblower report speaks of raising questions about whether catastrophic failure would be a feature rather than a bug, whether, in other words, the entire system is intended to exclude millions of eligible voters and sow chaos. In his letter to Postmaster General Steiner, Senator Blumenthal wrote, "For example, if a state election official brings a batch of 10,000 ballots to USPS, and USPS is unable to match just one of those ballots against the portal, because, for example, someone has recently changed their name after marriage, or they've moved, then USPS would refuse to mail the remaining 9,999 ballots as well." The non-response of the Democratic Party is typified by the pro forma statement issued Tuesday by Robert Garcia, congressman from California, who said, "This new secret tracking system at the U.S. Postal Service is faulty, untested, and threatens to totally disrupt ballot delivery for millions of American citizens. We are fighting in court to protect the right to vote by mail for all and will continue to investigate. The Trump administration's attack on the right to vote will not be halted by the courts or by appeals to the Democratic Party. Only the mass, independent mobilization of the working class against the entire political and economic system will halt the assault on democratic rights and the drive to dictatorship." Blood on their hands. Trump's immigration Gestapo drives Haitian student Pierre Damas Bell to suicide. 20-year-old Haitian college student Pierre Damas Bell died Monday morning after being struck by a tractor trailer on Interstate 70 near Springfield, Ohio, in what his family says was a suicide driven by the Trump administration's persecution of Haitian immigrants. Bell's death came weeks after Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, forced him to wear a GPS ankle monitor following the termination of temporary protected status for approximately 350,000 Haitians. Although he had committed no crime and had a pending asylum case, the aspiring doctor was shackled with an electronic device used by ICE to track immigrants it is preparing to imprison and deport. Bell was one of more than 100 Haitian immigrants in Springfield, fitted with what amounts to a modern-day yellow star, a GPS ankle monitor that brands its wearer as a criminal while allowing ICE to track every movement in preparation for kidnapping and deportation. Hundreds more have been summoned to ICE offices where agents confiscate their passports and order them to report back every few weeks. At 8:03 a.m. Monday, Bell called his father by video. "I'm not feeling okay mentally because of the bullying," he said. His father urged him to come home so they could talk. Roughly 3 hours later, police arrived at the family's door and told them their eldest son was dead. Bell had graduated with honors from Springfield High School in May. He played varsity soccer, participated in the Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps, and had received a scholarship. He began classes at Wright State University in August, where he was studying neuroscience and hoped to attend medical school. Wright State described him as an active honor student who was already engaged in campus life. Bell entered the United States through the Biden administration's CBP, Customs and Border Protection, one program to reunite with his parents. He had TPS and an asylum application pending, with his next immigration hearing scheduled for October. None of this stopped ICE from summoning him to an office and fastening the monitor around his ankle. His father said other students mocked and bullied him. Bell repeatedly asked immigration agents to remove the monitor, but they refused. On July 30th, Bell posted photographs of his academic awards, soccer team, and the monitor. "Yet now I'm walking through the streets of the United States with a GPS monitor on my leg," he wrote, describing the shame and humiliation it caused. His father said the government treated my son like an animal. Bell's death was the direct result of the Trump administration's fascistic mass deportation operation. "His blood is on the hands of Trump," Stephen Miller, Department of Homeland Security, DHS, Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen, and the ICE agents, who shackled a 20-year-old honors student with a GPS monitor to humiliate him, destroy his sense of security, and terrorize him into leaving the country. These methods of warrantless seizure, electronic surveillance, indefinite detention, and state violence are establishing the framework for a police state directed against the entire working class, regardless of immigration status. The campaign against Haitians has been prepared through years of racist agitation by Trump and the entire Republican Party. During the 2024 election, Trump and J.D. Vance spread the fascist lie that Haitian immigrants in Springfield were eating residents' pets. Trump has repeatedly denounced Haiti and African countries as shithole countries, while portraying immigrants as criminals, animals, and invaders in an attempt to divide the working class. This filth is now being translated into mass arrests, electronic monitoring, concentration camps, and deportation flights. On June 25th, the Supreme Court's six-member right-wing majority cleared the way for the administration to terminate TPS for Haitians and Syrians. Haitian TPS formally ended July 27. Since then, the administration has dispatched two large deportation flights to Haiti. A flight carrying 161 people landed in Cap-Haïtien on August 20. A second arrived August 27 with 57 people, including several children born in the United States and Brazil. The youngest passenger was a one-year-old U.S. citizen effectively expelled alongside the child's parents. U.S. authorities have warned Haitian officials to prepare for as many as two flights a week. These expulsions are being carried out as Haiti is devastated by mass hunger, political collapse, and armed violence produced by more than a century of U.S. imperialist intervention. Nearly 200,000 people have been forcibly returned to Haiti from countries across the region during the first 8 months of 2026. The majority from the Dominican Republic and other neighboring states. Bell's death will not appear in ICE's official death totals. The agency classifies immigrants fitted with ankle monitors as part of its non-detained docket, even though their movements are tracked continuously and the threat of imprisonment hangs over every interaction. The exclusion is aimed at concealing the full human toll of a mass deportation operation that is destroying lives inside and outside the American gulag. The same apparatus of state terror was deployed early Sunday morning in Memphis, Tennessee, when ICE and other federal and state agents descended on El Corralón, a nightclub on Macon Road, and arrested 121 immigrants. The raid, dubbed Operation Corral Light by the Department of Homeland Security, began around 1 a.m. Agents surrounded the building, zip-tied patrons and employees, and transported them away in buses and vans. Witnesses described children crying in the street as their parents were taken away. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation had obtained search warrants connected to allegations of illegal gambling and drug activity at the business. ICE used the criminal investigation as a pretext to detain virtually everyone inside and determine their immigration status afterward. Advocates reported that several people were eventually released after proving they were legally present in the United States. DHS claimed that all 121 people ultimately arrested lacked legal status and said some had previous arrests or convictions. The agency did not specify how many had criminal records, identify the charges arising from the raid, or disclose where the detainees were being held. The Memphis Police Department said it did not plan or execute the operation and that its officers arrived later to direct traffic and control the crowd. The Memphis Safe Task Force also denied that the raid was one of its operations. That denial does not separate the raid from the military occupation imposed on Memphis. The Memphis Safe Task Force, created by Trump in September 2025, combines federal, state, and local police with the Tennessee National Guard. Together, police and military elements have flooded working-class neighborhoods with armed agents conducting traffic stops, searches, and arrests. The murderous character of this operation was further exposed last week with the release of the autopsy of 20-year-old Tyron Johnson, who was killed by Tennessee National Guard troops assigned to the task force on July 5th. Authorities initially claimed Johnson turned toward pursuing troops and pointed a handgun, forcing them to use deadly force. The autopsy found that the bullet entered the right side of Johnson's back and exited through his upper chest. An independent forensic pathologist said the slightly upward trajectory was consistent with Johnson running away. The absence of soot or stippling indicated he was shot from more than 3 feet away. Johnson's family has still not been shown video supporting the government's account. His death was classified as a homicide, but no guard member has been charged. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation continues to describe its inquiry as open and ongoing. Johnson was one of four people killed in encounters involving the Memphis Safe Task Force between May and July.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI. the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.